In this session, we will explore two other criteria which enable us to determine an individual's UK tax liability. These are the concepts of ordinary residence and domicile. Let us start with ordinary residence. Ordinary residence is less strictly defined than residence and is generally less important. Usually the terms resident and ordinarily resident go hand in hand, but there are some important distinguishing factors. Ordinary residence means habitual residence, i.e. where an individual is typically resident in the UK year after year. It is therefore possible for an individual to be resident in the UK, but not ordinarily resident. An example of this may be a short-term visitor. A visitor may come to the UK for a short period and be caught by the 183-day rule. The visitor would be resident for that particular tax year, but if they typically or habitually live abroad, they will probably be regarded as not ordinarily resident. You will see this referred to as R, but NOR. Individuals coming to the UK permanently are regarded as both resident and ordinarily resident from the date of arrival. Short-term visitors will become ordinarily resident if they are caught by the 91 days on average rule. For example, if an individual comes to the UK on a short-term basis, and after 4 years the revenue finds that his visits to the UK over that 4-year period have exceeded 90 days on average, the visitor will be regarded as resident and ordinarily resident from the start of year 5. Also, as we mentioned in the previous session, if an individual comes to the UK on a short-term basis, but his intentions change, such that he will be spending more than 90 days per tax year in the UK, he will become resident and ordinarily resident from the start of the tax year in which his intentions change. Let us now consider ordinary residence from the point of view of a long-term visitor. If an individual comes to the UK and intends to stay in the UK for more than 3 years, that individual will be resident and ordinarily resident, i.e. R and OR, from the date of arrival. If the individual owns or acquires accommodation on a long-term lease in the year they arrive, they will also be considered ordinarily resident from the date of arrival. However, if the individual disposes of the accommodation and leaves the UK within 3 years, they will not be considered ordinarily resident. If, however, an individual comes to the UK and at the outset he intends to stay in the UK for less than 3 years, he will not be ordinarily resident from the date of arrival. If it turns out that that individual is still in the UK 3 years later, he will be regarded as ordinarily resident from the beginning of the tax year in which the third anniversary of his arrival falls. This is best illustrated by a timeline. Assume that an individual arrives in the UK in July 2006 with the intention of staying in the UK for 2 years. If the individual is still in the UK in July 2009, he will become ordinarily resident from this 6th of April 2009. Therefore, for the first 2 tax years, he will be resident, but not ordinarily resident. For 2009-10 onwards, he will be both resident and ordinarily resident. HMRC could argue that the taxpayer acquired ordinary residence status earlier than 2009-10 if, for example, he had acquired accommodation in the intervening period. The purchase of a house or taking out a long lease on a property would indicate an intention to remain for more than 3 years and would make the individual ordinarily resident from the start of the year in which the accommodation was acquired. In the vast majority of instances, residence and ordinary residence go hand in hand. If an individual is leaving the UK permanently or indefinitely, they will be both not resident and not ordinarily resident from the day after the date of their departure. However, if their return visits to the UK average 91 days or more per tax year, they will remain both resident and ordinarily resident in the UK. If an individual is leaving the UK to work abroad full-time, they will be treated as both not resident and not ordinarily resident from the day after their departure, provided they will be absent from the UK for a complete tax year, and their return visits will be less than 183 days per tax year and average less than 91 days per tax year. It is possible to be not resident in the UK, but to remain ordinarily resident in the UK. For example, an individual who normally lives in the UK would not be resident for a tax year if they were not in the country at all during a tax year. However, as the UK is where they would usually be resident and is where they have their normal home, family and social connections, they would still be ordinarily resident in the UK. The concept of domicile is more important than ordinary residence in terms of the effect it has on an individual's UK tax liability. Domicile is a concept of general law and is separate from residence and ordinary residence. An individual is generally domiciled in the country in which he has a settled intention to permanently reside. This phrase has been quoted in tax cases where an individual's domicile status has been an issue. In simple terms, an individual is domiciled in the country in which he has a permanent home. An individual can have one and only one domicile. It is possible for individuals to be resident in more than one country at the same time. However, it is not possible for an individual to have dual domicile status. There are three separate types of domicile: domicile of origin, domicile of dependency, and domicile of choice. Let us start with domicile of origin. An individual normally acquires a domicile of origin from his father when he is born. This is not necessarily the country in which the individual is born. For example, if a baby is born to British parents while they are on holiday in Australia, the baby will be domiciled in the UK and not domiciled in Australia. Domicile of origin usually follows the father, but it can follow the mother or a legally appointed guardian. A child will have a domicile of dependency until he or she is legally capable of changing it. A person has a legal capacity to change their domicile on reaching the age of 16. Until then, if the parent or guardian changes his or her domicile status, the domicile status of the child will change with them. This is what we mean by domicile of dependency. Before the 1st of January 1974, a woman automatically acquired the domicile of her husband on marriage. For marriages after January 1974, this is no longer the case. It is possible that a husband and wife could have different domicile statuses, although in most cases their permanent home will presumably be the same place, so they will have the same domicile. Finally, let us consider domicile of choice. This is a slightly misleading term, as it seems to imply that taxpayers can change their domicile at whim. A taxpayer can merely change his personal circumstances in such a way as to leave the revenue to conclude that he is no longer domiciled in the UK. To lose a domicile of origin in the UK and establish a domicile somewhere else, the individual must leave the UK and settle permanently in another country. If an individual is trying to persuade the revenue that he has established a domicile of choice in a country other than the UK, the revenue will require evidence that the individual has abandoned his ties with the UK and settled permanently abroad. There are a variety of factors that the revenue will look at in determining whether an individual has either lost a UK domicile or acquired one. In simple terms, it is far easier to acquire a UK domicile of choice than it is to lose one. The government is very keen to argue that individuals are domiciled in the UK because they are able to collect more tax from UK domiciliaries than from foreign domiciliaries. To lose a UK domicile, the individual must essentially sever all ties with the UK. An indicator of this is the sale of UK properties and the acquisition of properties abroad. The individual must move abroad and take his family with him. It is prudent to keep return visits to the UK as low as possible. Remember that the taxpayer must demonstrate a settled intention to reside permanently in another country. Too many return visits to the UK may lead the revenue to question whether the UK is, in fact, the place the taxpayer regards as home. Some taxpayers over the years have taken the rather extreme measure of purchasing a burial plot in their new country. The idea is to underline the fact that their final resting place will not be in the UK. There is no single criteria which determines whether an individual is or is not domiciled in the UK. Instead, a balance of probabilities approach is taken. The same is true in considering whether an individual has acquired a domicile of choice in the UK. Long-term residence in the UK could be an indicator that the individual is, in fact, UK domiciled. This is by no means clear-cut, as just because an individual may have been resident in the UK for, say, the last 20 years, it does not necessarily follow that the individual regards the UK as his permanent home. The revenue have indicated that a long-term resident will need to demonstrate a substantial probability that he will return to the country of his permanent home in order to preserve non-domicile status. Long-term residence should therefore be regarded as an indicator rather than a conclusive factor in itself. While the concepts of citizenship and nationality are not necessarily the same as domicile, if a foreign national takes steps to acquire UK citizenship, this may well be an indicator that the foreign national has acquired a UK domicile of choice. The assumption here is that the foreign national would only apply for citizenship if he wanted to regard the UK as a permanent home. Marriage may also be an indicator that an individual has acquired a domicile of choice in the UK. If, for example, a French national comes to the UK and marries a UK citizen, and they settle and start a family in the UK, it is probable that the French national has become a UK domiciliary. As tax advisers, you should take regular steps to review your client's domicile status. It is quite easy, particularly in the case of a long-term resident, to accidentally acquire a UK domicile of choice. As we shall see in the next session, the effect of this will be to bring the client's foreign income within the charge to UK tax. There are a couple of practice questions to finish this short session. Annika is regarded as UK resident in 2010-11, as she has been physically present in the UK for more than 182 days in the tax year. As she is not intending to stay in the UK for more than 3 years, she will be treated as not ordinarily resident. From the question, because Annika's father is German, we will assume that Annika has a German domicile of origin. As she has been living in Sweden, it is possible that she may have obtained a Swedish domicile of choice. It is quite clear that as she is not intending to settle permanently in the UK, she will not be UK domiciled. Annika will therefore be resident in the UK, but not ordinarily resident and non-domiciled. The correct answer is therefore answer C. Let us consider Madge first. Madge will have acquired a UK domicile of dependency, as she married a UK citizen before the 1st of January 1974. Guy has a UK domicile of origin and seems to have done nothing to change this. Both Madge and Guy continue to live in London, so they are still UK domiciled. It is possible that at some point in the future they may acquire a domicile of choice in Canada. However, for the time being, both Madge and Guy will be UK domiciled. The correct answer is therefore answer A. This concludes this session on ordinary residence and domicile.